do fraco, estrangeiro gozador, cocar de coqueiro baixo, quando engano se enganou.
Welcome to the Near Post Local, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell. In the week past, we've had a full round of Futsal Premier League. North and South Canberra futsal games have gone apace in their second round. And of course, the men's and women's masters football, women's summer sixes and the men's summer 20s have all been played. Go to the Capital Football website for all detailed scores. They should be up there now. The big news is that Canberra United had a draw against Central Coast Mariners at Bruce Stadium. This was an excellent result in all the circumstances, but not without cost, as one of the Chinese Taipei players, a defender, sustained serious knee injury and not expected to be seen again this season. That'll cause Coach Juna to reshuffle and rethink, but I'm sure he'll sort that one out. This week, importantly, they play Brisbane Roar. Turn fixture, they play at McKellar. This is a must-win game. As things stand now, it's loss, loss, draw, win, draw. Time for a win. I think they can do it. Get out to McKellar on Saturday afternoon. The big news that many of us are waiting for is the announcement by Capital Football of the composition of the Premier League season 2010 going forward. There have been a number of clubs apply that haven't applied before, that's our understanding, and a couple of clubs thought better of applying next time round, and on balance probably a good thing. However, the big point is, of course, will it be an 8-team or 10-team competition? At this stage, we don't have any further information to give you. As soon as we do, we'll let you know. In the meantime, you need to contact your club to find out your club has a licence to participate in the Premier League next season. Now for the interview. This evening we're going to source last Sunday's interview on the SBS World Game with Alfred Gullustian. You recall we interviewed him the week before. But the World Game interview with Les Murray and Craig Foster was a real good one, and it spoke to Gullustian's involvement at the very top level, and specifically with the coaches who will teach our very best. Now we'll compare and contrast that with some material drawn from the Georgia Soccer Association in the US. This is a very forward-thinking organisation. They do the analysis and they do their research well. They're looking how to develop players at all levels with all sorts of abilities. And they've drawn on that rich vein of football knowledge and performance, Brazil. Let's see how they see it. Now, allow for the fact that cultures are all different, structures are a little bit different, but the similarities far outweigh the differences. There are big changes in football in Australia, and it's starting from the bottom, the 8 to 12 year olds, and going forward from there. There are two aspects to it all that merge. They come out in interview all the time. You hear them on the sidelines all the time, and it's not always clear what people are talking about. It's about the general development of players and the development of talented players. Are they the two sides of the same coin, or are they something else? When are they the same, and when do they diverge? How do coaches get to grips with the changes and help the players they coach, both at club and representative level? When does the new national curriculum devolve down to clubs and coach level in the sort of detail that goes beyond the simple statements of intention, no matter how well intentioned, and so on and so on. This is a tricky subject that we're dancing around. And don't discount the fact that a number of our own people in our community are very well informed of football and see the way ahead very clearly, just as clearly as some of our perhaps more eminent and well-regarded and well-credentialed near post local guests. Don't sell ourselves short. There's no absolute one view, but one thing's clear. Our football's changing and it's heading to a possession-based game with much greater emphasis on the acquisition of technical skill over a number of years and at the lower age groups. That much is clear. All clubs need to pick up this baton and begin to reinforce this intention and get themselves immersed in the new national curriculum. It's a big ask. It will take years, but it needs to start quickly and early. So let's get started. You recall we spoke to Alfred Galustian, International Director of Curva, last week, and he gave us the breaking news that the FFA had contracted him as a specialist consultant with regard to technical training, specifically to train those people who would train the very talented players. And the focus was on technical development, game-related technical development. Let's hear what he had to say on the SBS program, that wonderful program, The World Game.
Craig and I are joined in the studio by Alfred Galustian, who has a critical role to play in the Skills Acquisitions Program. Alfred, nice to see you again.
Nice.
You've been with us before many times, of course, but always to talk about the Curva program. Yeah. But you're here for a different reason this time.
Yes.
Explain it.
Yes, guys. What happened was Kelly Cross, who I've known a long time, is head of education for the Australian FA, contacted me and said that Hamburger, the technical director, was putting together a curriculum. And one integral part was to do with, if you like, teaching the perfect skill. Between the ages of 8 and 13, what we call my years in Japan, the golden years. So Kelly suggested that I come and speak to Han and Alistair Edwards, give them my ideas on how we could improve elite players in this perfect skill.
So now you've put together a curriculum, is that right, Alfred, which this week brought in a number of former professionals to teach them how to best develop players in this really important age group. For us, it's a very important age because slowly, and Vitor said the technical revolution is moving further and further down into the game. How important is the age between 8 and 13? And what are the core elements of the program? How are they getting it across?
Craig, I think 8 to 13 in my experience and my opinion is the golden age, i.e. that if you train players, especially elite players, the core skills, and I'll describe what I mean by core skills, between these age groups, they could have them for the rest of their careers. So the core skills, running with the ball, 1v1, passing, and first touch. It's not only what you teach, but it's how you teach. You know, I think what you teach is drills and games, but we really focus this week on how to teach. Things have changed and I've changed my views, and one of the main things is this whole idea of not being a skills teacher but being a teacher of the effective use of skills.
Yeah.
So it's a different thing than being just a skills teacher.
It's what Han insists on, the game-related concept. Can you explain that? You know, what is the difference between this system, which is game-related, and other more isolated systems?
Les, if I can use a bridge analogy. When you work with grassroots players, I call it crossing the bridge. You work, you know, repetition, because repetition is the only thing that can improve skills. Then you add complexity and speed, limited pressure defender, then the game. But elite players have already got good skills, otherwise they wouldn't be elite players. If you go around all the pro clubs in Europe, the players are pretty good at 8 to 13. So what I call it is reversing the bridge. You start with full game pressure. You look at where possibly these players could be improved in the core skills. And then, so it's basically game experience. You play the game. The coach looks, okay, this player's got this problem, this player's got that problem. Then you've got what you call skill breakdown. So I see you and say, look, your first touch, for example, good first touch, but the direction of your first touch is wrong. Okay, I'm going to have to work with you. And Craig can be another player and he might have another thing that I have to work with. And then we end up again with game success. So it's game experience, skill breakdown, game success.
I guess from the perspective from the coaches out there who are listening, a very important age group. What are we trying to achieve, though? In the end, aren't we trying to come out with a new generation of technically perfect players? Is it possible? I believe it is. You know that. But what are we looking at? Players who can play at speed, can play under game pressure, so that their first touch is always very strong regardless. The direction of their first touch is good. And in particular, are two-footed, which is something which Australia has really struggled with. So we're looking at really well-rounded players technically to go on, as Han said, then into a tactical education in their early teens. But what about the last element that everyone is looking for, this ability to make the difference, the ability to be, if you like, a creative player, to take unpredictable solutions? Can it be coached, and if so, how?
It's players who can make a difference. That's what I think it is, guys. You know, and I say this, you know, I'm no defensive expert, but more or less many coaches know how to defend. You pack the numbers, you press. And it's the players who can unlock that door that we want to try to teach. And we want to get teachers who can teach that, who can see what the core skills are, break those core skills down, say this player has nearly all the facets are correct, but this little bit needs to be tweaked. But it's basically players going to make a difference. Create a goal chance individually or in small groups. But somebody who can go it alone, if required. I know it's a team game, but you have to have this element of going it alone if required.
In terms of what we Australians lack, and you'd be familiar with that, what is the best overseas model for us that we should look at and say this is what we want to be?
Les,
this is the gap we have to look at.
Yeah, I've tried 27 years to look for that. You know, I worked many years in France. I worked at pro clubs. I don't know if there's any one facet. I think that what we need to do is to concentrate on this 8 to 13, have the best with the best, have the best coaches with the best, and teach those coaches to teach these core skills, from the use of those skills to effective game use. I could say France, but now, you know, things are cyclical. We had a wonderful generation in France, and now it's a little bit of a struggle. Yeah. It's a very difficult question to try to find a model. You guys know, I was saying that I've worked in Japan a long time, and Japanese went from the Brazilian model to the European model, and I think everybody's looking for the exact model. What I would say
which suits them best, yeah.
Let's say that universally, 8 to 13, let's agree on that this is a core, this is the golden age.
Yep.
And let's select the best kids, and then let's teach them the right thing. And I would suggest to you is that there's only four core skills, and the teacher that we're trying to teach, and I'd like to focus on the teacher, can help each player improve those core skills under game pressure. If they can do that, then there is no model, because it's like your program, the World Game. It could be universal.
I was fascinated this week. We've talked about here, Alfred, for the last few years about the importance of possession. We see Spain, really keep the ball, and to win Euro 2008 was extraordinary. Mm. You were saying to the course participants this week that there is very much a global trend. I know you spent some time in France with Julien. Mm. Global trend towards possession, but effective possession. Just give us a quick explanation of what you said to the boys.
There's possession, like the Italians play, and I love Italy and I worked there many years, but they kind of use that for a defensive mechanism. You know, we keep the ball, they can't shoot. The Spain Arsenal model, I'd like to add Arsenal if I can, Craig, here, is this balance between possession, keeping the ball, and the killer pass, when and where to play that pass. And so when the young players are 8 to 13, we're trying to encourage this very wonderful and creative pass. If we can't do it, we'll keep it. So it's this balance. Effective possession, to me, Craig, is the balance between keeping it and hitting the killer pass.
So that's Alfred Gulistian's take on his contribution to the FFA, to Australian football. Technical, high technical, game-related. Early years, lots of it. Repetition, developing very sound technical preferential behaviour when increasing pressure is applied. It's almost unarguable. So let's step out of the dizzy heights of the highest level of the sport, and many thanks to the SBS, that was a real good interview. Let's jump across the ocean to the Georgia Soccer Association, that is State of Georgia, USA. We did say this was a world game, and if you haven't been there, Google in Georgia Soccer and go and have a look at their website. This is one group that are real forward thinkers. But a lot of their messages have been trumpeted by some and modelled by some people here in the ACT. That's well worth remembering. But nevertheless, let's look at Georgia Soccer. They're a nice model for us to look at. I was alerted to Georgia Soccer by Pat McCann, the Assistant Technical Director at Capital Football, who of course has a very substantial experience, knowledge and contacts with football in the USA, that is soccer as they call it. His advice was go and have a look at this and go and look at a couple of videos they've got there on philosophy of player development and some good factual material about the virtue of small-sided game as opposed to full-field 11v11 in the junior lower end of youth. It's beautiful stuff. Pat subsequently sent that information to just about anyone on Capital Football's mailing list, and a lot of people have taken note of it. For those who haven't, here are some samples. This is another football association saying how they think it should be. It is a world game, but there are many heads thinking the same way.
player development philosophy. What does it mean? Who is in charge of philosophy? What is your role? This is a message to youth soccer coaches and parents. Most coaching courses typically include a section on player development. And when coaches discuss player development, invariably the term player development philosophy comes up. What is a player development philosophy? Is there a right way and a wrong way to develop players? Who decides on the philosophy? And what is the role of the parents and coaches regarding the philosophy? These are not easy questions to answer. To complicate matters, youth soccer in America is a reflection of the American melting pot and the country's sheer size. We're dealing here with a country the size of a continent and a population that's multi-ethnic. Many of them come from different soccer backgrounds. You're watching a typical American soccer tournament. In this case, the State Cup tournament in Georgia. Observe the play and ask yourself the following questions. Do the players have good ball control? Do they make good decisions? Are they creative? Is this good soccer? The game you're watching now is a U14 girls game in the State Cup tournament. Compare the playing style of the two teams. The white team seems to emphasize ball possession, while the black team tries to get the ball forward quickly. Watch how most of the players on the white team try to control the ball first and look for supporting teammates close to the ball, while the black team players look for an early long pass. Which style is more effective? Which style is more conducive to player development? Which style is more enjoyable to watch?
And to put it bluntly, that is precisely the sort of debate that is going on in Australia right now. Our new national curriculum is heading us down the path of possession-based football, with a high emphasis on sound technical ability as early as possible. We're not alone.
Now observe this under-14 boys semi-final game from the State Cup. It's a bit too frantic, with very little control or possession. Is it frantic because of lack of skill? Or are the stakes so high that there's too much pressure on the players to play with composure? Are they playing at a speed that they can handle technically?
How many times have you stood on a sideline and watched a game unfold in precisely that manner? Craig Foster, the SBS World Game, very correctly pointed out during the coverage of the Under-20 World Cup that it was a delight to see our Australian team play the ball and play it in a style that gave us some hope for the future. We didn't win, but we made a very important step towards playing the sort of game that will lead to success in the future. More power to him. Let's just listen to what the Georgia Soccer Association has to say on a not dissimilar matter.
Recent results by U.S. national teams in international competition suggest that we're still a long way from developing world-class players. Many national staff coaches are alarmed by the trends they see in youth soccer. John Hackworth, the U.S. under-17 men's national team coach, recently told Soccer America magazine, quote, "The emphasis on winning is a deterrent to young players because it prevents us from developing technically proficient players and we're not giving them the ability to make decisions," unquote. Hackworth continues to say that you can't find youth soccer games where coaches aren't screaming the whole time, telling kids what they should and should not do. Tab Ramos, the great U.S. midfielder who is now a New Jersey soccer coach, tells Soccer America, quote, "that players hear clear it, get rid of it, pass it, kick it up the line. And they hear it so often by the time they're 13 and 14, when they do get the ball, and they don't hear instructions, then they don't know what to do."
Now the Georgia Soccer Association thought about their situation and they went and looked at Brazil. They found Brazil to be most instructive and in a fashion that has only just recently been absorbed into the ACT in respect of the high performance programs. Futsal. Futsal is a key to the development of the technical abilities required of football players. In Brazil, futsal is an integral part of the football environment. I recall attending a lecture given by Hahn Berger, the FFA's technical director, launching the new national curriculum. It struck myself and others in the audience that futsal was just almost an afterthought, no more than a 5v5 small-sided game, which in a sense it is. But in every respect, futsal just got moved over as though it were little more than light entertainment. Let's hear what the Georgia Soccer Association has to say about these observations and how it informs them of the way ahead.
If our players are not as creative as players from the other countries, the question is why? What are the players taught in other countries, which is different from what we teach here? To get some answers to these questions, we traveled to Rio to look at the player development system in Brazil. We chose Brazil because it's universally acknowledged that Brazil produces more world-class players than any other nation. Brazil is also a huge country divided into states, just like the U.S. And just like here, each state in Brazil organizes their own soccer setup. The earliest age in which they hold a national championship in Brazil is at the under 17 level. The under 17 national championship is held once a year, over a 2-week period, in one location, and every club from every division can participate if they can afford the fee and the travel expenses. In Rio, the very best players in all age groups, starting at the under 13 level, are picked up by the big and famous first division clubs, such as Flamengo, Fluminense, Vasco da Gama, and Botafogo. The next best players try out for the smaller first division clubs, and then for the second, and then third division clubs. If players in Brazil are signed up by professional clubs at around the age of 10 or 11, how do they develop before the age of 10? The answer is futsal. The first experience of organized soccer for Brazilian children is a game of futsal. Futsal is a 5v5 game played on a hard floor using a very small ball that doesn't bounce much. Kids as young as 5 start playing futsal in social clubs, sports clubs, or also in school. Futsal is the most common soccer experience of players between the ages of 5 and 10. After that, players can either switch to outdoor soccer or stay in futsal or even do both. You're now watching a practice session by the professional futsal team of Vasco da Gama. Watch the scrimmage and observe the players' ball control, quick passes, and the constant interchanging of positions. This is a game that prepares Brazilians for the outdoor game. All the great players we've seen in the World Cup, such as Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, and Kaká, started life as futsal players. Futsal is also played a lot in school. Many of the schools in Rio lack resources and space. For them, futsal is an ideal solution, since it requires little space and maintenance. Watch the skill required to play this game, the quick passes and dribbling. Watch how they place their foot on the ball to control it.
Now, to jump off on a tangent here, just think back to the last time you're on the side of a football field and recall, if you can, the noise, the instructions being yelled at from parents, various coaches and others to their players or children on the field, and ask yourself, was this environment around these players conducive to good football? Well, here's what the Georgia Soccer Association thought about that one after it had a good look at Brazil.
The most common instruction coaches in Brazil shout to their players is calme. It means relax, keep your composure. It means don't just kick it. Keep the ball until you see an option. It means shield it if you have to and wait for support. It means if you're meeting a cross, don't hit it first time if it's bouncing awkwardly. Control it with your first touch and place it in the net. Calme. You hear it all the time.
Brazilian teams train much more often than we do here and don't play as many games. Youth players in the pro clubs from U13 onwards train Monday to Friday, 5 times per week, and play one game on the weekend. Occasionally, they will play 2 games in 1 week, but the second game would typically be played on a Wednesday morning. They would never play multiple games on the weekend like we do. Recreational players train 3 times per week in their soccer schools. They all work on technique in almost every session.
In Brazil, each age group of a youth team could have as many as 40 players. On the weekend, only 11 players play. The rest of the players don't get to play in the game. But it's what they do Monday to Friday that develops them. They place high importance on the training and the technical development in training. Here, we think that players develop by playing games, and we play too many games and we don't train enough. And when we do train, most of it is geared towards preparing the team for the next game. So we do a lot more team development than player development here, and the individual skill suffers.
Let's start with the very young ones. From the very beginning, the coaches encourage the players to control the ball and express themselves. You're watching a U8 practice session at the Zico Academy Soccer School, where they're working on dribbling. Remember, this is recreational soccer.
If you compare the environment you just saw at U8 in Brazil to the typical experience of U8 players here in Georgia, the contrast is huge. In a typical U8 game here, the parents are right on the sidelines, on top of the players, and are constantly shouting at the players to kick it, to cross it, to shoot it. The coaches are constantly telling the players where to stand and where to move. The American parents are not watching the game passively. They are part of the game, and the players are not given the chance to make their own decisions. If you came home and saw your daughter playing Monopoly with her friends, would you run and stand behind her and start shouting, "Roll a dice, roll a five, buy that house, don't go to jail"? You wouldn't do that because you recognize that this is your daughter's leisure activity where she spends time with her friends and nothing else. But soccer is also a leisure activity for your daughter in exactly the same way. Now, the children like it when their parents are watching them play soccer. They want to show their parents the new tricks they learned in practice, and they feel safer knowing that their parents are there. We want the parents to be there and enjoy watching their kids. But in the US, parents have a tough time just being passive supporters. They become too overbearing. Unfortunately, some of the parents become emotionally engaged in the game and allow the competitiveness to get the better of them. This is when the game gets a little nasty, a nasty edge to it, when parents start shouting at the players and criticizing referees' decisions. They become part of the game, and they shouldn't. It doesn't happen in Brazil. A few years ago, Georgia Soccer had a silent Saturday where the coaches and the parents were asked to keep quiet and refrain from coaching from the sidelines for one game. Most parents didn't like the silent Saturday. They have a tough time staying detached and just watching the game. When you think of it, in Brazil, every game is a silent Saturday at the youth level, because most of the time the parents are not there, and when they are there, they just sit quietly and watch.
Brazilian youth coaches understand that the key to player development is technique, skill, and the freedom for young players to make their own decisions and express themselves. They have a conviction in their method that is based on the history of producing the most skillful players in the world. They know this philosophy works. They're comfortable with it. There is a tradition, a history that no one can argue against. No parent or fan would question their player development philosophy, because these are the coaches who produce Ronaldinho, Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos, and hundreds like them. Brazil exports 1,000 players per year to leagues all over the world.
But here in the US, if a coach was to tell his parents in the preseason that he's going to emphasize possession soccer and individual development, the parents will go, "Okay, whatever." But as soon as the team concedes a goal because a defender lost the ball trying to play out of the back, they all gang up on the coach and tell him the philosophy doesn't work. And the poor coach will have a tough time defending his methods. Because here, we don't have tradition or history of producing great players. The youth coaches don't have the conviction to stand their ground against criticism.
Well, that's interesting. I can think of one important example that speaks against that here in Australia. At the under 13 boys national championships held in Canberra in April this year, the Western Australian team, coached by their high performance director Warren Grieve, were an absolute revelation. Always prepared to play the ball. Goalkeeper did not kick long. He fed the ball out from the back. They always played from the back. It cost them games. But they were a stunning football team, and it was reflected in the selections for the under 13 Australian team. Importantly, all of the parents knew precisely what the coach was doing and gave him 100% support. Oh, that we could all play that way and had that understanding with our football community.
The problem in the US is that no one has the credibility or authority to say this is how we must develop players. In some ways, the melting pot is a hindrance, because with so many different soccer backgrounds, no one is seen as the ultimate authority. The club directors of coaching don't have the credibility. Even the state directors of coaching and the national staff coaches don't have the credibility to shape the philosophy.
In most other countries, the philosophy was influenced by the top, and player development was filtered from the top down. In the US, the player development philosophy is evolving from the bottom up. Which brings us back to the original question as to why American players lag behind in skill development. The answer cannot be found in a coaching manual. There are no special drills or magic formations that Brazilian coaches use. Our coaches use the same drills and practice sessions. The difference is in the mindset, the tradition, and above all, the philosophy. It's a philosophy based on the belief and conviction that in soccer, superior skill and creativity will always win out at the end, and that coaches and parents must not coach creativity out of players. Our coaches don't allow the players to solve their own problems. From the very beginning, our players are overcoached. Not only are they overcoached, but the instructions that they get are often based on misplaced adult perception of playing the percentage game or safe play. Listen to the coaching.
Good shot. Spread it out. Get out of trouble. Swing it. Swing it. Early time. Earlier. Come on, don't start talking. Good. Good. Come on, Miles. Look at Jack's feet. Early. Turn.
Be with him, Scott.
Nick, hit, hey, Nick, diagonal ball, come on, Warren. Get that, hit the line. Give it. Take him on, Nick.
Pass. Keep passing it. Move your feet.
The average American parent doesn't really care that our youth clubs don't produce players for the national team that are good enough to win World Cups. The average parent only cares that his or her child has an enjoyable soccer experience and that down the road it might bring a college scholarship and a free education. My advice to the parents is that if you want your child to reach his soccer potential, you need to let them play and let them learn on their own by trial and error. It's the best way to learn. Be there for them and cheer them, but don't become part of the game. It's not your game, it's their game to discover.
Well, can't think of better advice than that. And that's it for the Near Post Local. If you're getting to the near post, make sure you get there first. No sense in getting there second. Ball will be somewhere else. Make sure you get to McKellar this Saturday to see Canberra United play Brisbane Roar in the return match. Let's hope for a win. Enjoy your football and futsal. See you next week. Go to the podcast. Ta-da.
Verdadeiro urarara, não me impede de...